The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Zen Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Case 37 from the Blue Cliff Record. A monk asked Great Master Ma, aside from the four phrases in the 100 negations, please tell me directly why Bodhidharma came from the West. The Great Master said, I am tired today and cannot explain it to you. Go ask Zhejiang. The monk asked Zhejiang about it. Zhejiang said, why don't you ask Master Ma? Well, he told me to ask you. I have a headache today and can't explain it to you. Go ask Brother Hai. The monk asked Brother Hai about it, and Hai said, I don't know anything about that. The monk told Great Master Ma about this, and the master said, Zhejiang's head is white. Hai's head is black, aren't they? Zhejiang's head is white. Hai's head is black, aren't they? So here we are in the middle of Sesshin, deep in it, and taking up a koan, which is what our tradition here at Boundless Way is to do during Sesshin. Investigating these ancient stories. The word koan, the word koan means public case. And this is precisely what koans are about. Life, here and now. Nothing more public than life right out in the open. Nothing hidden. And yet koans themselves are merely stories, vehicles for the teaching. Who knows if they actually happened? They might have. They might not have. They might have been part of the fictional imagination of one of the collectors. Doesn't quite matter. The koans that we look into are done with a teacher. Certainly you can go out to Amazon and buy collections of koans or search subreddits or listservs and investigate koans on your own. That wouldn't do you much good. They're certainly interesting and entertaining and mysterious in some ways, and maybe we get a little bit out of them, but the value of koans is working with a teacher. Because the koan appears in a way as an intermediary between student and teacher. The content of the koan isn't as important as what arises in the moment of encountering the koan, encountering the story. Koans, in and of themselves, have nothing really to offer. But the encounter with a koan, with the guidance of a teacher, helps us see our patterns, our habitual ways of seeing reality, seeing life, seeing this. These patterns or maps or constructs, conceptual formulations that we have built over and over again in our minds about the way things are, about the way we are, about the way life is, constricting us and causing us suffering and pain. And these koans as we investigate them. Reveal this. And for maybe one moment, one glimpse, we can see. We can see how we are mistaken about our life. And then that mistake, that view, that error usually folds back in. Because just because you understand a koan intellectually doesn't mean you have anything. The process of working with a koan, what arises in you, in the teacher, that is the gold. That is the jewel. What is here, what is now, is not hidden. But our mental fabrications and the views we have cloud what is here. Filter it. Those filters are stories about who we are, about who others are, of how the world is, how the world works. And they are actually quite useful. But when we lose sight of our lives, mistake the map for the territory, so to speak, we suffer. And for 99.9% of most people, not a big deal. They'll just pick up something else somewhere else and keep going. But I think those who have found this path, who have invested this time and energy to come here for a weekend, understand something beyond anything that could be explained with words. Understand in the heart that our days and nights go by like lightning. And to value the time doesn't mean to spend it in excess or accumulate things or experiences. It's to look deeply into this life and what is here. And koans help us with that. But koans not in themselves, but not by themselves, but with a teacher. You could answer all the koans and come up with all the answers and please the teacher, and at the end, what would you have? Nothing. And yet, as I said, quoted from Keizan last night, seeking it yourself with empty hands, you return with empty hands. What you have is freedom. Freedom beyond a conceptual view of freedom. True freedom. To awaken to who you are in this moment. Not who you were in the last moment. Not who you will become right here and now. Looking into this koan, we have the great master Ma, as Alan talked a little bit about, this incredible teacher. Well revered, a lot of history behind him. Responsible for the lineage of Zen that we practice today. And yet, his wonderful function was no different than the wonderful function of you. The wonderful function of a human being. Looking into this, living life, wearing your clothes, eating your food, doing your day to day. And so the monk, perhaps, in our story, comes to him seeking something. Something that he believes he does not have. And one of the great ways we encourage students to work with koans is to put ourselves in the place of each character. The teacher, the student, the monk. This monk is us, and so is Master Ma. It's clear that Master Ma is not about to give him any sort of information. Because the information that he has would not do him any good. The monk doesn't see at this point that he has all he needs. He's diving into philosophy. Aside from the four phrases and the 100 negations, tell me directly why Bodhidharma came from the West. He might as well have been saying, what is the meaning of life? What am I doing here? Why did I come here? Why did I spend 3, almost 4 days in a sesshin with a bunch of people sitting around staring at the floor? My body is aching. I'm tired, irritated, or maybe I'm dreamy, not getting anything out of this. That why did Bodhidharma come from the West is sort of the catch-all question that we are all asking ourselves in each moment. What is this? What is going on? And Great Master Ma cannot give him an answer, and yet not an answer that he would like to hear, in the form that he would like to hear, and yet he does answer. He answers him directly. I am tired today and cannot explain it to you. I am tired today. On the surface, that sounds like he's brushing him off or kind of trying to evade his duties as a teacher. But no, I am tired today and cannot explain it to you. Right there, everything. How often we are tired today and can't explain anything. And looking for something else as a solve, as a solution, as an answer. It can't be this. It can't be. Of course it is. Of course then the mind comes in and says, well then what good is it to be doing this stuff that we're sitting here staring at the floor? What good is it? The days and months go by like lightning. We should value the time. We pass from birth to death and the time it takes to breathe in and breathe out. We cannot guarantee even a moment. That's why we're here. Because if we aren't here, wherever we are, we're not there. We're off distracting ourselves, making ourselves useful. Everything, doing everything, except being in the middle of our life. And this gift of sesshin, this incredible gift, handed down to us for hundreds of years, allows us the time, the space, to look. And even if it appears just for a moment, it is worth it. The monk moves on and goes, why don't you ask? He goes on and asks Zijian about it. And Zijian passes it off. Why don't you ask Master Ma about it? Direct inquiries. Passing back and forth. This monk, who is us, who's me, who's you, doesn't see that the answers are being given, handed to him. Handed. They just don't appear in the form that he's expecting. Just as they don't appear in the form that we're expecting. We come to Sesshin and our bodies are wracked with pain. That's certainly not the form we're expecting. Or maybe we are and we don't want it. And this role of a teacher. In this story, I chose this story for the Sesshin because there are three teachers here. Three teachers here at Sesshin, three teachers in the koan. Each teacher giving his own view of the Dharma, giving his own view of reality, life, teaching. Each teacher coming from a different place and yet pointing the same direction. I have a headache and can't explain it to you. I don't know anything about that. The three teachers you see here in front of you today each have their own path, their own way of explaining, of presenting. And you may be inclined or appreciate one teacher over another. I think that's one of the valuable things about Boundless Ways. We have many teachers. We are a teacher sangha. But each of us does our best to express and explain the thing that cannot be explained. I have a great admiration and love for my teacher, David Roshi, who I love his Dharma talks. They're like little roller coaster rides or theme park explorations. They just don't know where they're going to go, and they bring up so much for me. And I assumed, most people thought that, until I recently spoke with a friend of mine who's not in our Sangha, another Buddhist practitioner, not in Zen, but who is a fan of our podcasts and listens, and was just gushing about Melissa, but then said, that David guy, no way, I just can't listen to him. And right away I felt this urge to defend us. What are you talking about? Oh my God, no! But there it is. The Dharma. There it is. Each world, each view presented in unique ways. No one view. And yet, this is inescapable. Right here. I haven't always had the best relationships with teachers. My early years as a teenager in school were generally spent staring out the window in the back of the class. Might have had a little dyslexia, just totally uninterested. And I would always hear, Mr. Herzog, pay attention. And I would say, I am paying attention, just not to your bullshit. And I thought, well, why do I need trigonometry and history and English? I want to be a rock star, a musician, a guitar player. And so after high school, I found myself on the road traveling with three other guys up and down the East Coast playing bands and staying in hotel rooms and eating peanut butter sandwiches, and that's just about it. And wanting to make it, and all of a sudden the great irony was I needed a teacher. I needed somebody to show me how to do this. Where I thought I could find my own way and travel, cut my own path, it became clear that I didn't know what the hell I was doing with my life. And so, like a magnet gravitating toward someone, something to give me the answer. What do I do with my life? I thought I knew. Please tell me. Tell me. I have the wonderful joy of having a 2-year-old grandson, and I spend an awful lot of time with him. And the joy that I get out of him is this ability to see the human being evolving and coming online. Alan mentioned in his talk yesterday, we're all ex-children, and there are still children here. I have this incredible honor and joy to see that in my 2-year-old grandson. He requires the guidance of his parents. He requires the tender, loving nurturing. And his mind is constantly grasping. What is that? Is one of his phrases. Or what happened? Or, of course, no. But I can see it slowly getting covered up. I pronounced the word, for some reason, I pronounced the word pizza as pizza. And he said, Pepe, it's pizza. He knew that I was doing it wrong, saying it wrong. Already at 2 years old. And on he goes. And on we go. Slowly, coming into this world with our rules and our boundaries and our ways of thinking. Looking for others to help us, looking for guidance. And guidance is needed. And yet, no one can give us our own life. That's up to us. No one can answer. No one can tell us why Bodhidharma came from the West. Matsu, we read The Fruit of the Bodhisattva Way. This is the great Master Ma. He says, speak appropriately about the affairs of your own life, for each matter you encounter constitutes the meaning of your existence. Each matter you encounter constitutes the meaning of your existence, and your actions are without hindrance. Zen has nothing for you. But Zen is a container. A Zen is a compassionate action of people. Holding you, giving you the space to discover the answer for yourself. You won't find the answer in a book or from a teacher or in the sutras. You will find the answer in your heart. Do not squander your life. Look. A monk asked Great Master Ma, aside from the four phrases and the 100 negations, please tell me directly why Bodhidharma came from the West. The great master said, "I'm tired today and cannot explain it to you. Go ask Zhejiang." The monk asked Zhejiang about it, and Zhejiang said, "Why don't you ask Master Ma what he told me to ask you? I have a headache today and can't explain it to you. Go ask Brother Hai." The monk asked Brother Hai about it. Hai said, "I don't know anything about that." The monk told Great Master Ma about this. The master said, "Zhejiang's head is white. Hai's head is black, aren't they?" Thank you. So let's arrange the zendo in a little bit of a horseshoe, and we can open it up for a dialogue. And Vix, could you just push just a slightly back so I can see this row a little bit? Thank you. So, questions, observations, questions about your practice, how it's going this weekend, keeping it to Zen. I will stop. All right. Tanta.
I was struck in just like rehearing, "I'm tired and today and can't explain it." I think how I heard it before was, "I can't explain why Bodhidharma came from the West." But today I heard, "I'm tired and I can't explain it." And I love that, because I think something about the container for Zen for me, so often I don't want to just come forward with what I'm feeling, because I might have to explain it, and I don't want to. And there's so much permission in Zen where you get to come forward with how you're feeling without someone, you know, like inquiring about the why, that the why isn't so valued in this practice. And yet I still can feel that I hold back from coming forward with whatever it is for the fear of that inquiry is the thing that isn't important, which is that why. And so I hold myself back from that because I'm like, ugh, maybe I'll have to, or maybe they'll miss it, or maybe, you know, I don't know if you can speak on what I'm talking
about. And you hold yourself back, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. The holding yourself back, the awareness of you holding yourself back. I really appreciate you bringing this statement you said about we're not so concerned with why. Of course not, because we don't know why. We cannot know why. It's a waste of our time. The mind wants to know why, because it figures, if I can figure this out, then next time I'll have it all sorted, and no. We meet this moment here and now with our open hearts and greet whatever arises. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not that holding back is just okay, it's it too. So if you think like, okay, I'm going to hold back now, and because, you know, I'm waiting to then come forward, and that's when I'm really coming forward, that's when I'm really showing up. The truth is that we show up in the holding back. You know, any story we have, like, this is the way I'm supposed to be, this is the way, this is what it looks like when I show up, those are the ones that we just throw away and see, yeah, I'm tired. And I can't explain it to you right now. And that's it. That's it.
But having said that, don't hold back.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. The great paradox of Zen.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
Adam, did you raise your hand?
Yeah. Sorry. It struck me when you said that. How does one waste time?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, right. Can you say more about that?
How does one waste time? Yeah. How would you feel it? One wastes time.
Well, when you said it, I just had the thought of like, that's not for us to judge, and like it seems presumptuous to make a I don't know, a value assessment on time. I don't think that's something that humans can do or understand. Like you're pointing. That we don't know. So I'm just curious what that means to you when
so
you
that,
say it's a waste
right.
of our time.
So that may have something to do with what you feel wasting time is, right? What does it look like? And to me, I mean, anytime you're not here, mm-hmm. it's you're wasting time because you're not here.
Right. I mean, you also said that when you're not here on Sesshin,
I'm talking about here.
Okay.
Here.
Yeah, I know. Earlier you said that when we come here, because when we're not here, we're not there. This is what you said.
Right, yeah.
And isn't that a little bit of an assumption on your part that people who aren't here aren't present in their day-to-day lives? That
we have right, to so what does here mean? What does here mean to you?
Here, right here, right now.
Yeah.
You were making a locality distinction between coming to the temple and not being at the temple.
No, not at all. Here, right now, here. Where's here? Here is here. The temple, home, the drugstore, out walking in the woods. Here is here. Anything else is an idea. But we're stuck in our ideas. We're never, or often never here, and that's what wasting time is.
Thank you.
I can say for myself, Adam, that I'm coming here now for Sesshin, you know, every Sesshin. And as you know, we have like a dozen or more a year. And it's so that wherever I am, it's more likely that I'll be here. So I come here so that I can be here wherever I am. But it's hard for me to do that if I don't come here regularly. And that's how it works for me. Some people don't need that. I do.
Okay. Thank you.
Will.
Thank you for the talk, Michael. I guess this is really just sort of me observing my own mind with this koan. And the pattern I see is that the first two answers, which are, you know, I'm tired, I have a headache, go. I think to myself, that's the kind of Zen teaching I really don't like, right? That's throwing you back, and it's not giving you any encouragement at all. And yeah, I mean, you know, we can say, oh, it's very generous, but it also seems unkind. Whereas the third answer, I don't know anything about that. I love that. You know, and so I sort of see for myself that, you know, I have a habitual sort of self-constraining where I think, yeah, I'm the guy who doesn't get it. And so the first two sound like they're reinforcing my internal the script, right? Whereas the third one, I think, wow, you know, what is that? It sort of gives me a space. So, I mean, I'm aware that, you know, all three answers are there for a reason, but I see that in myself. And it's generally true with the koans that I sort of try to read the interaction with the teacher and for its superficial friendliness. And if it doesn't seem friendly on the surface, I think, oof, you know, one of these guys.
Right, yeah. So this is a wonderful thing that you're observing about how you encounter these.
Yeah.
And these koans are little vignettes or snapshots of life.
Yeah.
And then you can ask yourself, okay, in my life, outside of the koan, how do I do that?
Yeah.
That can be a way of entering, but of your practice. But still, the koan, what arises for you when you enter the koan is it. So I don't get what this, I don't like this answer.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
I don't like this answer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like how he responded. We talk about the kindly grandmotherly Zen master beating the crap out of his students with a stick. You know, I don't like that either. And yet, I don't like, that's it.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Yeah.
I think also, Will, that, you know, we can hear, I don't know anything about that, and we're trained now to go to, oh, yeah, not knowing is most intimate.
Ah.
Right, that's really cool. But being really tired is most intimate. And having a really terrible headache is most intimate. So are they all saying the same thing in different ways?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, thank you.
We'll go for six because you had a chance yesterday.
Yeah. Okay. I just appreciated what you were saying about, you know, not trying to get the answer from books, and then you mentioned like subreddits, and like the Zen Buddhism subreddit is like garbage. Like it's so bad. I appreciated you throwing that detail in.
Yeah.
I'm glad you've looked.
Yeah.
You know, I think this is part of it is that, you know, and I think this is, you know, what each of these teachers is working with this monk is that I'm so glad this monk is looking. Mm. I am so glad every time he asked the question. So I'm glad you looked at subreddit, and I'm also glad that it's junk, and you realize that. And there is something about this aspect of you know, asking this question. How many times does he have to ask this question? I don't know. But I'm so glad he's asking the question.
And also that looking into these alternate views, which appear to be junk, are also a way of entering our own practice. Like we can also say, well, these guys know what the hell they're talking about. I know what I'm talking about, you know, and that you can see how that arises. So even the junk teachings that we appear as junk are a place for us to enter, so we can start to see how we divide the world into, you know, this and that. And, I don't know how. You're about done?
It's your goal.
Yeah.
Today.
I think that's wonderful. Let's all restore the Zendo. And thank you all.